It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and online at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegfright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Homes are a value, not mortgages. And it's important for people to really understand that despite the fact that there is emotional capital that we've put into every place we call home, it may not actually be a financial asset if the amount you owe on the home exceeds the amount that the place is actually worth. Financially, then, the house is actually not an asset. And in a lot of cases, people need to step back and take a look to see whether or not this truly is an asset they want to commit to.
Bankruptcy attorney Andrew Chen explained what bankruptcy can and cannot do, what debts can and cannot be discharged, and what property can and cannot be saved. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn how the Social Security Administration has stopped trying to collect on old debts by seizing tax refunds. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 235, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Earlier this month, the Social Security Administration, or SSA, announced it will immediately cease efforts to collect on taxpayers' debts to the government that are more than 10 years old. The action came after the government started seizing state and federal tax refunds of about 400,000 Americans who had relatives who owed money to SSA. In many cases, the people whose refunds were intercepted had never heard of any debt, and the debts dated as far back as the 1950s. The effort to collect on old debts began with a single line in the 2008 Farm Bill that lifted the statute of limitations on debts to the government which were more than 10 years old. The Treasury Department then set up rules that allowed the government to intercept taxpayers' refunds. The department has collected about $2 billion in intercepted tax refunds this year, $75 million of that on debts delinquent for more than 10 years. Mary Grice, a federal worker who lives in Tacoma Park, Maryland, never got the refunds she was expecting this year. The government seized her checks because of a $2,996 debt that was supposedly incurred under her father's Social Security number. Her father died in 1960, when she was four, and her mother received survivor's benefits thereafter. 37 years passed between when SSA says it overpaid someone in the Grice family and when Grice's refund was taken. She was unable to find out from SSA exactly who received the overpayment, her mother or perhaps her father's first wife, both of whom are no longer living. Grice filed suit in federal court in Maryland, alleging that the government denied her due process by failing to give her notice of the debt and by taking the money from her, even though she was not receiving government benefits when the debt was incurred. She argued the government cannot hold children accountable for the financial acts of their parent. The Federal Trade Commission on its website advises that family members typically are not obligated to pay the debts of a deceased relative from their own assets. Hundreds of taxpayers whose refunds had been intercepted came forward and complained they also had been given no notice of the debts, and the government had not explained why they were being held responsible for debts of their deceased parents. According to Senator Charles Grassley of Iowa, although Congress did authorize the government to seek payment on old debts, the law says nothing about allowing the government to offset payments from an individual to pay debts not in his or her own name, and it is unclear where the government has that authority. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're speaking with bankruptcy attorney Andrew Chen at the offices of Counselor Chen, just south of the Midlothian Turnpike in Chesterfield County near the Cloverleaf Mall. And we will be talking today about what bankruptcy can and cannot do for you. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Good morning, Marty. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. So let's start with the very basics. We see all of the advertising on TV, in the yellow pages, on the internet. Bankruptcy will stop collection activities, garnishments, repossessions, etc. What is bankruptcy going to do in the immediate short term right after you file bankruptcy?
Well, that's a great question, Marty. Typically, what happens for first-time filers there is a court injunction goes into place. This court injunction is called an automatic stay, and it causes most creditor collection actions, such as garnishments, repossessions, utility cutoffs, and unfinished evictions, to actually be stopped by law. If these creditors continue to pursue these actions, they'll be in violation of a court order. There can be penalties associated with that. So in most cases, once a bankruptcy is filed, creditor collection actions on these items will generally cease, and it can be a very huge boon.
Now, you mentioned it will stop an unfinished eviction. I gather that it won't stop all evictions. Could you explain that?
Typically, if a landlord has begun a unlawful detainer, it has to be reduced to judgment. And of course, a judgment of possession would then put the landlord beyond the automatic stay there. But if the landlord has not yet obtained a judgment of possession, the filing of the bankruptcy would cause that landlord to have to cease pursuing that in the local state courts unless he has a court permission to proceed otherwise.
And we'll talk about that in a moment. But first of all, how do the creditors even know that a debtor has filed bankruptcy and that they have to stop these collection activities, the calls, the letters, the lawsuits, et cetera, et cetera?
Typically, as part of the bankruptcy process, you are required to list all your debts and all your assets and provide notice to every one of your creditors. And by listing them out on a bankruptcy form called the creditor's matrix, you will allow the court to send notification of your bankruptcy filing to every one of these creditors. And it's a good way to get important documents there and to otherwise notify these creditors that you filed a bankruptcy and that their rights with regard to collections have now been limited.
And what happens if a debtor just forgets about a creditor and doesn't list them on that creditor's matrix, goes ahead and files bankruptcy? Is there a way to fix that?
There is, Marty. The first question would be whether that forgetfulness was intentional, of course. But assuming it was just an inadvertent mistake, the court charges about a $30 fee to go ahead and get creditors added. And what you can do is make an amendment to your petition there and have that creditor added in. Whether that debt might otherwise be contested or otherwise might cause issues since it wasn't initially notified remains to be seen. But by and large, there's not going to be too much issue with adding in creditors that were inadvertently left out.
Now, you mentioned when you talked about the automatic stay that this was something that applied to first-time filers. But I understand that if someone filed a bankruptcy within the prior 12 months and it was dismissed or was not carried through to conclusion, there can be a limitation. There is a limitation on the automatic stay. Could you explain that?
That's absolutely right, Marty. The bankruptcy code has been tweaked to essentially penalize frequent flyers of the system. The general idea is that Congress doesn't want bankruptcy filers to abuse the system. With the powers associated with stopping collections, a person could simply file bankruptcy, not carry through, and cause court actions to just drop out. Because of that, there are penalties that are associated with repeat filing. So in the case of a first-time filer with no prior filings in the last year, there's not going to be any sort of exception. The full automatic stay, the full court injunction, is going to apply. But if there is a filing within the last year or more, the amount of time there that the automatic stay, that court injunction, is going to be limited. And of course, that amount of time shrinks as the number of filings go up.
So if you do file, it really is important to pursue it to the end and the discharge rather than filing and letting it be dismissed?
Absolutely. It's very important to carry through with an effort to petition the court for a discharge. And barring any sort of extraordinary circumstances, a failure can be very detrimental.
Now, earlier you mentioned that the automatic stay applies to all of the creditors, but a creditor can petition the court to have the stay lifted, at least as to them. Could you explain that process, what that's all about?
With regard to creditors seeking to break through the court's automatic stay there, they can certainly petition the court to do so. That's called a motion for relief from stay. Very typically, you see these actions from creditors who hold secured claims or have ongoing litigation in other forms. And what you see is a creditor petitioning the court, asking the court that they be allowed to proceed as an exception to the court injunction that's in place. And of course, locally here in Richmond, one of the two bankruptcy judges would then hear the creditor's motion and decide whether there's merit as to that motion and whether or not it should be granted.
So let's talk about specific types of claims for relief from the automatic stay. Let's talk first of all about a mortgage company. Let's say a mortgage is behind, delinquent, and some creditor, the mortgage company, petitions for relief from the stay. Is that typically going to be granted?
It certainly depends on whether or not the debtor is behind, and it will depend also on what chapter has been filed. Typically, in a Chapter 7, since there is no designated and pre-designed plan to catch up the portion that the homeowner is behind on the mortgage, you do see mortgage companies seeking to get relief from the automatic stay. That is a very likely possibility. But in cases where the homeowner is not behind, or perhaps in a Chapter 13 with a plan of reorganization that looks viable, you can see creditors waiting and biding their time to see what will happen. Typically, it depends on how the creditor sees the debtor as far as their likelihood of success and whether or not the problem of the mortgage arrears will be fixed.
And would your answer be the same for a secured creditor on, let's say, a car loan? Again, if they're current, they might just wait and see, or if it's a Chapter 13, they might wait and see. But if it's an arrearage that has no possibility of being caught up, then they would file the motion?
That's correct. On higher value automobiles, you do see motions for relief fairly regularly here, simply because it's in the creditor's interest to try and recover that vehicle if they believe that the debtor simply has no chance of trying to fix the issue in a reasonable time. But as an economic matter, you do see some creditors with low-value, low-equity cars simply electing to bide their time and wait out the period of a 7 to decide and elect to take action afterwards, simply because they just don't want to have to file for the motion for relief from stay.
So a lot of people want to file a bankruptcy in order to stop a foreclosure. And a lot of times they're just not in a position where they can't afford the house at all. They're simply buying time. How much time would they in fact be able to buy, given that the mortgage company would likely file a motion for relief from a stay and petition the court to be allowed to proceed? What's the time frame there?
The time frame is going to vary there, Marty. If it looks like the homeowner is going to have some degree of success, at least in proposing a plan of reorganization, that period could be a lot longer than if it appears to the mortgage company that the likelihood of success is low. What I won't do is put a set amount of time on that, but I will address the underlying issue, which is that homes are of value, not mortgages. And it's important for people to really understand that despite the fact that there is emotional capital that we've put into every place we call home, it may not actually be a financial asset if the amount you owe on the home exceeds the amount that the place is actually worth. Financially, then, the house is actually not an asset. And in a lot of cases, people need to step back and take a look to see whether or not this truly is an asset they want to commit to.
Most people think that if they file a bankruptcy, then all of their debts can be discharged. And my understanding is that most debts can be discharged, but not all debts. So what are the debts that people should be wary of because they cannot be discharged in a bankruptcy?
As a rule of thumb, the vast number of debts that people list in bankruptcy are discharged, as that's the very purpose of it. But there are a number of the so-called special debts that do not get discharged. And of course, taxes are always the big one. There's a special rule governing the type of taxes and when those taxes were filed that affects whether or not they might be dischargeable. In addition, of course, any sort of action for money obtained by fraud are going to be subject to a non-dischargeability action. Furthermore, of course, any unlisted creditor might potentially be subject to that. There are special rules governing those folks as well. If you're in any sort of business or if you act in a fiduciary capacity, some sort of special actor, a trustee of sorts, those debts potentially might not be dischargeable as well, depending on the action surrounding that. And of course, the classic ones are, of course, child and spousal support. Those are very difficult. Student loans and government fines and penalties. Those are kind of the big ones there. Not so common are, of course, criminal restitution and also DUI-related personal injuries. On occasion, those do come up, but by and large, I would say the big four are really going to be taxes, child and spousal support, student loans, and government penalties. So if you have speeding and parking tickets or any other court fines of that type, you might want to take a look at that.
And what about other debts other than student loans that are owed to the government? Let's say an overpayment of some type of public benefit. Would that be something that could be discharged in a bankruptcy?
That's a potentially complicated question there. Very often here in Richmond, you do see folks who have run afoul of the Virginia Employment Commission there. And depending how long the case has progressed, most certainly that might be something that the local courts could address. But by and large, if it's considered a criminal fine at that point, it's going to fall into the category of criminal fines and be non-dischargeable. So it behooves people who have been applying for unemployment to be very careful about the numbers that they're putting down.
Now, earlier we talked about a creditor's relief. A creditor's motion for relief from stay if they're a secured party. But let's say that you are a debtor and you're buying a car on credit and you file a bankruptcy. Is it possible to file a bankruptcy, either a Chapter 7 or a Chapter 13, and save that car that you're buying on credit?
Typically, the answer is going to depend on how the creditor wants to proceed. Now, if you file a Chapter 7, the personal liability on that car is going to be subject to discharge. So that means that any sort of money left over after the car is potentially sold would be covered by the discharge. But whether you can actually keep the car or not will certainly depend on the creditor. If the individual is behind on the car significantly, the creditor may choose not to work with that debtor. But if the car is current, there's very little economic incentive for the creditor not to continue to work with that debtor. So barring some sort of particular history where the creditor and debtor just don't get along, as long as the car is current financially, there's a very good chance that that relationship will continue and that the debtor will be able to continue to drive that car.
And what about buying a house? Is the answer the same?
For houses, it's a little more tricky, of course. In a Chapter 7, it's really going to depend on whether the creditor is willing to give some sort of leeway as far as trying to catch up that debt, especially since Chapter 7 has no built-in mechanism for doing so. But in a Chapter 13, as long as the plan of reorganization proposes to pay off all the arrears in the next 3 to 5 years, typically, there's a very good chance that the Chapter 13 will allow that party to continue to possess the home.
Another big question that we get at Legal Aid is people who want to file a bankruptcy, not necessarily because they want to save a house or they want to save a car, or even that they face garnishment or other type of collection action, but they want to file a bankruptcy so they can improve their credit score or improve their credit report. Does filing a bankruptcy actually improve a debtor's credit score or credit report?
It's going to depend a lot on the individual's unique credit situation. For folks who have a very clean credit report, bankruptcy is not going to be a very good idea at all. Addressing the individual items on that credit report is probably going to be a better way. But if there are a significant number of debts for which that person has very little chance of fixing, it's a good way to try and clean the slate and start over fresh there, especially with regard to dealing with large amounts of medical debt, utility debt, credit card debt. It can be an opportunity to start over fresh there.
And do you find that filing a bankruptcy is, especially for people who have, you know, significant debt and a poor credit score, a bad credit report, do you find that filing a bankruptcy actually will make them more credit worthy, will make lenders more likely to loan to them, make housing providers more likely to rent housing to them, or even employers more willing to hire them? Or is that, again, a case-by-case basis thing?
It most certainly is a case-by-case basis, but it does give a lot of folks a boost here. When it comes to credit reports, most creditors simply look at the score. A lot of people really rely on that credit score as a shortcut to a person's credit history. And when a lot of these unpaid debts are finally pushed off the credit report through a bankruptcy, that score can rise in the long run, and it can be a very good benefit. Now, there, of course, is that exceptional group of creditors who does not use the credit score and actually reviews the credit history for the individual items. And for those folks, whatever they see could, of course, cause them to unfairly judge that person. But by and large, for folks that look at the credit score, car dealers, many commercial lending institutions, a bankruptcy which clears off these unpaid debts can really help a person's credit score in the long run.
But obviously completing the bankruptcy, of course, is essential.
And that ties full circle to the earlier comment there about making sure that when you start a bankruptcy, you complete it.
Thank you very much. We have been talking with Andrew Chen, who is a bankruptcy attorney at Counselor Chen PC, just south of the Midlothian Turnpike in Chesterfield County, right near the Cloverleaf Mall. And we have been talking about what bankruptcy can and cannot do for you. Thank you so much for being on the show, Andrew.
Marty, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. The show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on this show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. What happens when an attorney's collection letter goes too far? Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when consumer protection attorney and friend of the show, Dale Pittman, explains the limitations on collection letters that are imposed by the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.